Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
So quite a few years ago, when our boys were really young, we were out for a bike ride, and our boys had these used bikes that were, I don't know if they were second or third hand, and while we were riding along, I think Judah was about six or seven, and his tire blew. Now, I grew up in a Dutch family, so bikes were just part of life. That's what they do. And I knew what a tire blowing looked like and what you do with that. But this was a little different because it wasn't the inner tube that blew. It was the whole tire, like crack in half. The bike was that old. So, you know, no bad accidents or anything like that. We just walked the thing home. And so it had been sitting in the garage by itself for a while. And one day, Graydon came in the house and said with a whole lot of confidence, "I fixed your bike, Jude, with polyfilla." So he smeared polyfilla all over the tire and thought, that's it. That's what you do. And it's cute. It's kind of funny. And sometimes I think in our lives, that's what we do to try to fix situations, and we figure we've got this all together. So in that light, we are looking at Proverbs 16, verse 18 this morning. We're coming to the end of our Proverbs series that we've been going over through the summer. We have all of the messages that we've done throughout the summer are available online, so you can listen to those. You can also subscribe as a podcast. We also have our the live event that's available weekly on your smart device, and it has relevant scripture for today, and it also has information about the church, and it also has where do we go from here questions. How do I apply this? And you can do that, you know, on your own or with a family member or in your small group. I know we have at least one small group that's been doing this regularly. But Proverbs 16, verse 18 says this: "Pride goes before destruction, and haughtiness before a fall." Now, this is there are a lot of these proverbs, these little bite-sized nuggets of wisdom. These are the things that we can apply that we can mull over and say, "How do I live skillfully?" They're done in an ancient Hebrew poetic style, and sometimes we've seen some in the past that would have a contrasting parallelism. So this is true, but here's the opposite. This one is a synonymous parallel. So these two things are saying the same thing, just in different words. Pride goes before destruction, haughtiness before a fall. Haughtiness is not a word that we really use today. I'm kind of surprised they use that. Some translations say arrogance. The idea that I don't really need anybody or anything. I've kind of got this on my own. I used to work with a guy years ago now who would say this regularly. He would say, "I got this." And sometimes the more he said it, the less confident I was that he actually had this. Because when you have that when you have that overconfidence in your own ability, you stop looking. It's kind of like walking without looking at the ground and looking at your surroundings. You can't see what's around you, and you're going to bump into something, or you're actually fall. The word for haughtiness before a fall, that word could be translated tottering or falling. Like you're going to like lose your balance and fall. There was a number of years ago, and I remember it was quite a few years ago because it was before everybody had a smartphone. At this point, maybe some people had a smartphone. And I had to go to the doctor's for some reason. I don't remember why. Maybe a checkup or something like that. And so I went to my appointment. I went at the appropriate time so that I could wait for 45 minutes because that's what you do. So I'm sitting there in the waiting room. There's charts on the wall advertising drugs. You got Elton John's Tiny Dancer playing on the radio, and you're sitting there bored, and finally, I'm trying to, you know, you try to avoid contact, because we're Canadian. I want to avoid physical contact, because I don't want to get sick, and finally, my boredom overcame my sense of self-preservation, and I looked for a magazine to read, okay? So, I mean, you got, you know, Women's Weekly, and Chatelaine, and not even a Reader's Digest. So finally, I was desperate. I finally picked up a National Geographic. And I was flipping through it, and I saw an article on the Hurricane Katrina issue, okay? Have you ever had one of those, a Twilight Zone moment, where even temporarily your entire framework of the way the world is shifts and you go, what is going on here? That happened to me while I was reading this article. And I found the article, I printed it out, and I want to read the first bit for you. Okay, so it's describing Hurricane Katrina. It was a broiling August afternoon in New Orleans, Louisiana, the Big Easy, the city that care forgot. Those who ventured outside moved as if they were swimming in Tupelo honey. I had to look up what that was. Those inside paid silent homage to the man who invented air conditioning as they watched TV storm teams warn of a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. Nothing surprising there. Hurricanes in August are as much a part of life in this town as hangovers on Ash Wednesday. But the next day, the storm gathered steam and drew a bead on the city. As the whirling maelstrom approached the coast, more than a million people evacuated to higher ground. Some 200,000 remained, however, the carless, the homeless, the aged, and the infirm, and those diehard New Orleanians who look for any excuse to throw a party. The storm hit Breton Sound with the fury of a nuclear warhead, pushing a deadly storm surge into Lake Pontchartrain. The water crept to the top of the massive berm that holds back the lake and then spilled over. Nearly 80% of New Orleans lies below sea level, more than 8 feet below in places, so the water poured in. A liquid brown wall washed over the brick ranch homes of Gentilly, over the clapboard houses of the Ninth Ward, over the white column porches of the Garden District, until it raced through the bars and strip joints on Bourbon Street, like the pale rider of the apocalypse. As it reached 25 feet, 8 meters over parts of the city, people climbed onto roofs to escape it. Thousands drowned in the murky brew that was soon contaminated by sewage industrial waste. Thousands more who survived the flood later perished from dehydration and disease as they waited to be rescued. It took 2 months to pump the city dry, and by then the Big Easy was buried under a blanket of putrid sediment. 1 million people were homeless and 50,000 were dead. It was the worst natural disaster in the history of the United States. The next sentence said, "This hasn't happened yet." That's when I had my Twilight Zone moment. What do you mean this hasn't happened yet? Then I looked at the date of the National Geographic. It was published in October 2004. The hurricane hit the next year in August. Everybody knew this was going to happen. But they were walking around with their eyes closed. So the article went on to talk about how they were predicting this could happen because people were not paying attention to the levees. People call this an act of God. Why could this happen? Why would this happen? Well, hurricanes happen all the time. But the berms and the levees that held back water were rated for the worst storm you could possibly imagine in 100 years. Now, New Orleans has been around for hundreds of years already. But they said, the worst storm in 100 years, that's good enough. So who do you blame when that happens? There was all kinds of government corruption where people were not maintaining the levees. The money that was supposed to go to maintaining them went to line somebody's pockets. And so whose fault is it? This is an example of pride going before a fall. We don't need to do that. We don't need to take care of that. I got this. And people died, and people suffered, people lost their homes, and whose fault is it? I got this. The message from today, this verse, it's funny because it's rounding out this whole series. And the very, very first message in the series dealt with the proverb that said, "Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." We all have the potential for a hurricane to show up. We all have the potential to be hit by something that we're not ready for because we're not paying attention. But ultimately, are we paying attention to the creator of the universe who, as Claudette was talking about, has a direction and a purpose, who will guide us if we're paying attention? And we don't always, because sometimes we think, I got this. There's all kinds of reasons we don't pay attention, and I don't want to say some of them are legitimate, and some of them might be more understandable. Ultimately, if God is who we believe or who we say we believe him to be. If God is this creator who, I mean, our universe is immense beyond imagination, and if he speaks this into existence, if he's that powerful, that eternal, and he has a direction for you, if he has advice for you, how do you dare defy him if he's that powerful? How do we treat him casually. The other side of it is, we've truly understood how much he loves us. If he truly understand that he is good, why would we want to ignore him? And I think that's where the crux of it is. We don't truly understand how powerful he is. And we don't truly believe how good he is. Because if we did, then we would have no room for pride. Now, there are all kinds of reasons, as I said, that we don't open our eyes, because sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes we're closed in by our wounds and by our pain. Because when you're in pain, everything's a threat. I'm afraid of allowing somebody to see what's really going on. I'm afraid of actually being honest with God, which is, there's a huge irony to that. It really reminds me, when we did the Genesis series, that the part where God says to Adam, "Where are you?" as if he doesn't know. And Adam is hiding. And so we hide ourselves from God because we're afraid of what he might ask us to do. I remember it's an old story in ministry circles where somebody says, "You know, I would never, ever want to go be a missionary in Africa." And somebody else says, "Don't say that out loud, because if you say that, God's going to send you there." As if he tries to find the thing that you are actually most terrified of and most don't want to do, and in some bizarre masochistic or sadistic way wants to punish you with that. So don't let him hear you say it, as if he couldn't hear you if you whispered it. We don't trust that God has the ability to give us and do for us what we need. And we don't trust his goodness. So pride goes before destruction, because we don't trust him. To the extent that we trust him, we can live the life that he calls us to live. And by that, I mean the very best life you could possibly live. The very best life you could possibly live does not mean you driving a Lamborghini, because that's not necessarily the best life you could possibly live. We confuse the best life we could possibly live, a life of meaning and purpose and hope and peace, with the American dream. There's all kinds of people that achieve the American dream and commit suicide. What's the best possible life you can live? So every one of us this morning is faced with a choice to gradually crack open the barriers of our hurt and fear and increase our trust in God, or to say, "I got this. I can do it on my own." I say this every week. Maybe you've never even taken that first step. Maybe you haven't even begun your relationship with God. Claudette said, "You know, I became a follower of Jesus at the age of 6. And no one is ever too late to start that relationship. How do you do it? Well, it's as simple as ABC. I don't want to imply by any means that it's easy, because we're always in this journey of continued trust and acknowledging that he knows better and he's calling us to something more, to something better, not allowing us to be complacent in the life that we have. But it starts by acknowledging, admitting that we need him. ABC. A is for admit. I need you, God. I can't make it on my own. I'm tired of saying I got this and falling. So I need you. And then the B is believing that God has something better for you. And that something that's better is bought, was accomplished through Jesus, God himself coming to take our place. And he went to his death on the cross and overcame death itself, overcame our own self-destructive nature that we find so impossible to ignore. So A, admit your need for God. B, believe that that new life is possible for you. And then C, commit your life to him. Commit yourself completely to him. Because that is the choice. I got this, or I'm committed to doing it your way. And then that becomes the spiritual path, the spiritual life that we walk through. I forgot to mention at the beginning, my number's on the screen. You can text me if you have a comment or question relevant to the message, and I already have one. So we do have a few minutes left, so if anybody else wants to throw last-minute text in, you're welcome to. Can you speak about discerning God's direction plan for you versus your own pride giving you feelings of what to do? Okay, so Claudette already hinted at this. We talk a lot at Crossings Church about, and it sounds simplistic, it sounds really Sunday school. We talk about, it really amounts to three things. Reading your Bible regularly. And I don't want to give the sense that that if you do this, right? God, what do I do today? King Solomon became richer and wiser than any other king on earth. Perfect. That's for me. I claim that. No, when you read the Bible regularly, you learn to recognize what God's voice sounds like. You learn to recognize the difference between your own selfish and unhealthy desires and God's intention for you, that gut, right? And that gut may be different from person to person. That's the first thing. Second thing is prayer. And I've heard people say this before, that prayer is when you talk to God and reading scriptures when he talks to you. That's not true. Prayer also involves listening. If you have a mentoring relationship with somebody, if you have the life expert who's speaking into your life, when you meet together to have a conversation, if you're spending all your time talking and not listening, you're missing out. And so prayer also involves listening. I made the mistake once of saying that we read and pray the Bible. But that was a great mistake. Because when we don't know what to pray, turn to the Psalms and borrow those words. And then listen to what God says. And then the third thing is we need to do life with one another. We need to be sharing our life with one another, because when you don't, then you can mistake indigestion from spicy pizza to God's direction. Nobody's immune from that. We need the accountability of people around us. And why? Because without that, what we're doing, we're saying, you know what, me and God, I got this. It's just me. I don't need anybody else. I've met people like that. I don't need to go to church. I don't need to be part of this because I've got this, just me and God, and he speaks to me specially more than he speaks to you. And those people always go weird. Seriously. I mean, that's how cults start. When we're with one another, we're accountable in humility, because pride goes before destruction, right? In humility, I can say, you know what? God has called me to sell my house and buy a Corvette. And people around me go like, you are nuts. Okay, maybe I should listen to that, because that is nuts. So I hope that helps, discerning God's direction and plan for you. And one last thing. There are times when God, and he tests us on this. God, you cannot hear him speak. I don't know if you've ever gone through this. I've gone through this quite a few times. We went through a major life decision one time, and Michelle and I are praying and praying and praying, and Claudette says, sometimes God says yes, sometimes he says no, sometimes he says wait. There are times when God says nothing absolutely at all. And what do you do in those circumstances? Here's what I did in those circumstances. I take a step forward in a particular direction and allow God to change the direction if need be. You can't steer a parked car. Get moving. Get involved. Start serving. I don't know what to do with my life. Well, start loving God and loving other people. You love people by serving them in a way that's best for them, and it's amazing what can happen. But if there's an opportunity before you, and you go, I don't know if I should take it or not, take it, but allow God to change your direction. And I'll guarantee you, he will change your direction, because that happened to us. We quit our jobs in order to take a job at a church, and when we let them know that we were ready to take it, they said, yeah, we're not hiring anymore. That was fun. But we didn't have an answer, so we took a step forward. I can scripturally justify that to you if you'd like, but I'm not going to do it now. I don't have time. Is it a sin to use God to get good Christian things? This is a legitimate question, and I think there's an underlying problem with the question. The one problem is sometimes we become obsessed with deciding what is sin and what is not, rather than pursuing a life-changing relationship with God. Sometimes we grow up with this idea that we have two paths, hell or heaven, and I want to do as much as I can get away with without getting onto the wrong path. So give me the list of things. That's a really unhealthy way of living life. Pursue God. The second thing is, when you're in a relationship with somebody, you don't use them. Is it a sin to use God? You don't use people that you love. If you're loving God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, you don't use him. But I guarantee you this, if you pursue a life-encompassing relationship with God, you will get good Christian things. I don't know what that means to you, because it doesn't necessarily mean, I don't know, what's a thing? What's a Christian thing? You get love, you get joy, you get peace. Is that enough? Patience, kindness, goodness. You get faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. You get those kinds of things. I don't know that you get fancy Bibles or whatever other Christian thing would be. But thanks for that. Good question. We're going to close the service. I'm going to ask that you would stand. We're going to close in prayer today. And when the service is done today, Theater One becomes a prayer room. Okay? It's important for us to have relationships with one another in addition to relationships with God. I talked about doing life together. And so we always, and it's important for people to belong at Crossings Church. So I encourage people every week, find one person you've never met before and have a meaningful conversation with them. Okay? We're not asking you to abandon your friends, the relationships you have, but have a conversation with one person you've ever met that you've never met. We just ask that you do that in the lobby because Theater One becomes a prayer room when we're done. And so there are people here that have been challenged this morning in terms of your level of trust. And it may be, maybe you do trust God, but maybe there's an area in your life where you're struggling with that trust. Don't walk away without striving with God about that. Take the opportunity, take advantage of what we are offering this morning in terms of this prayer room. If you have kids in the kids program, they're going to run for another 15 minutes. We do that deliberately to facilitate you staying and praying. You can pray by yourself. You can pray with a spouse or family member or a friend. You can pray with your small group. But don't walk away without taking advantage of striving with God to trust Him more and trust Him better, that you would allow Him to reveal to you that He can do. He is powerful enough for what you need. But He's also good. He also wants what's best for you. And He calls us to ally with Him, to participate with Him in His purpose for us. Father, I thank You so much that You are trustworthy. And I know in my own life I've struggled with trusting You with certain things. Father, I pray that each one here would have an increased revelation, an increased concept or idea or sense of how great You are and how good You are, that we can trust You. Father, help us to move into increased trust. And it wouldn't just be a Sunday morning sing songs things, but we would trust You with our Monday morning. We would trust You with our Wednesday afternoon, with our Thursday night. We would trust You with our relationships. We would trust You with our finances. We would trust You with our free time. And that You would clearly lead and guide. You would direct our paths. Father, show us the areas in our life where we're saying, I got this. And show us, open our eyes to see the possibility in the future and the hope that we have in partnership with You. Ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.